One of the hallmarks of every NHL preseason is the good old professional tryouts. And honestly, like, I feel like this year we haven't heard much from it, but it doesn't seem like a lot of these guys are being signed this year.
And why is that?
Well, I don't know, because like one of the things that, remember, like, we were looking at guys like maybe like a Mike Hoffman a couple years ago, who was, you know, clearly worth more than, you know, a professional tryout, but because teams were so tied up to the cap that no one was willing to give him like an actual like fair value deal, so he had to sign a PTO, and it ended up, I think he ended up signing for something like almost minimum. But you would think, because it's kind of similar scenario this year, like a lot of teams are up to the cap, that everyone's going to be like on PTOs and then everyone's going to get signed. And, you know, this year it just hasn't happened. Like, I'm just looking right now. I want to say, as of the time of recording, there's maybe 3 guys who have signed PTOs. And like, they're not like significant guys. Like, the ones, Colin White, he signed with the Pens. Max William, I think, signed with the Devils. And then Zach Aston-Reese, who actually got released by the Canes, ended up signing with the Red Wings. Like, that's 3 out of 47 so far.
How much of it just comes down at the end of the day where it's just like teams have just kind of figured out what they want and what they're looking for, and they aren't waiting and around till the end of the season to kind of, not say pick up the remainder players, but like, you know what I mean? The players who are still available.
Yeah, like, I think definitely it's, well, I mean, like, preseason isn't over yet, right? Like, there could still be an injury, and maybe these guys are just waiting for the start of the regular season, and then that's when they get signed. But I think a lot of teams themselves are also kind of thinking like, oh, we've got in-house options who are probably younger options, and, you know, they have more attachment to these guys because maybe these are guys that they signed, guys that they drafted. So maybe they're thinking like, you know, we need to see what we have in-house first before even offering a contract to someone who's on PTO.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it just comes down to that, but who are the 3 that have gotten signed?
So far, like I say, it was Colin White with the Pens, Max Willman with the Devils, and Zach Aston-Reese with the Detroit Red Wings.
So none of the big names, though, right?
Well, I mean, there's not really any big names, I would say, on PTOs right now. Like, if I'm looking at the list right now, like, guys that I think might get signed, maybe you might see a Maxime Comtois. He's a guy that I would say might sign with Vegas. Noah Gregor seems to be a lock with the Leafs, but I think they're just waiting for cap shenanigans and then figure out how much they can sign him for. I think Danton Heinen with the Bruins is also a kind of likely scenario, given the lack of center depth they have and the familiarity with him. Other than that, I mean, like, there's names that you recognize, but not necessarily names that you think are gonna be signed from their PTOs. And like, granted, like, there's still free agents. I want to say, like, there's still people that could technically be signed from free agency who aren't on PTOs right now.
Yeah, I guess, like, it's one of those things that we don't really worry about until, like, you don't really think about the PTO guys until they do, like, really poorly or really well. I think really well, even, right? If they do really poorly, I don't think you really bat an eye. Like, for the most hardcore fans, they'll consider it. But, like, once you get past hardcore fans, people don't really pay too much attention to what goes on in the PTO, right?
Yeah, they're often, like, the last-minute signings that we kind of see. I don't know. I just find it curious that, like, if you look at previous years and, like, the number of people that signed to PTOs, like, I mean, again, like, you know, we're still, you know, there's still a couple more days before teams can sign their place to PTOs. But if you look at last year, there were 11, 12 PTOs that were signed out of 42. The year before, it's about the same amount. I'd say it's about 10, 11, 12 again. But like this year, we're only at 3. And it's a little bit, you know, worrisome for guys who are on the fringes of the NHL that, you know, PTOs used to be, you know, you had a lot more luck with, you know, you could, you know, sign a PTO and there's a if you perform well enough, you'll get a contract, or, you know, even if it's a minimum contract, the team clearly likes you enough to bring you in. But this year, it just seems to me like, you know, these guys are almost kind of being like, as, you know, like space fillers, just to like fill up a line, make sure you have enough for scrimmages. Maybe, you know, the team does like you a little bit, but they just don't have the cap space or the roster spots anymore to bring in these guys.
My perspective also, I think, comes down to, at least my guess is that, look, if I'm a player who would be most years signing a PTO, right? Do I risk trying to get an NHL job and, you know, probably get released from my PTO? Or do I just take an offer to go play in Sweden or Switzerland for a lot more money than I would playing in the AHL? Yeah, I'm going to get more money playing in the NHL for sure. But I might be able to get more than whatever I'm earning in the AHL playing in Finland, Sweden, Switzerland, right?
Yeah, I think that's going to change the thought process, right? Like, do you want to, you don't have that, you know, fairly decent chance of getting an NHL contract. You, like, why waste all this, like, developmental time? Like, not developmental time, like, this entire preseason when you could sign for, you know, overseas and actually get meaningful minutes and play games and, like, you know, get your season started. Well, right now you're probably just, you know, just waiting. In the end, probably going to be waiting for an AHL deal, right? Like, I agree with you. Like, I think a lot of these fringe players are going to have to kind of think about this a little bit more. Like, if PTOs aren't going to, you know, guarantee a contract in the end, like, maybe it's time to go somewhere else to look for a job.
So with that in mind, do you maybe start considering, hey, maybe this becomes a smaller and smaller part of what people are considering when they're taking in deals? Like, a PTO is just a less attractive thing over time.
Yeah, I think I wonder if players in the end just be like, hey, I'd rather you just sign me to an AHL contract and then maybe upgrade me to an NHL contract instead. So at least I'm not thinking like I'm on the verge of being released. Like, I at least have like a spot on a team. I wonder if teams start thinking about that. But I also wonder, like, in terms of preseason and training camp, like, you clearly need like a certain amount of players to run in training camp in the beginning. So I wonder, like, that's why I feel like PTOs have always been like there's a lot of goalies who end up signing PTOs because a team needs that fourth or fifth goalie just for practices and stuff, right? And that's why you see all these goalies sign PTOs. But I don't know. I just feel like, yeah, they might eventually get, I don't know, like, they'll get less and less common, I think, if this trend continues.
Yeah. And with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
You're listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network.
And we are back. So, Pat Verbeek finally signed his two most important free agents, restricted free agents, finally. Took a little while. I have no idea if they're going to get into any preseason games, but I'm assuming they've been practicing and they're ready to join the big team. Trevor Zegras and Jamie Drysdale both signed three-year deals. What are your thoughts on those two deals?
Honestly, less than I thought they'd be. Like, remember you said it was like, what, like 5 or 6 million for Zegras? Zegras, yeah, bang on, we hit it. Drysdale, I was going to think at least 3. The fact that he got 2.3 was, I was like, huh, really?
See, I feel like with like Zegras, yeah, I agree. We were bang on. I think we kind of understood. Like, we weren't thinking 3-4 million as what Renaud Lavoie kind of reported during their conversations. But, like, I think we were pretty much, no, like, he hasn't really, like, you know, shown up and, like, really, you know, I don't know. Like, Zegras hasn't, like, broken out yet, I would say, right? Like, if you were thinking of him as a superstar to get like an 8-year deal and to, you know, make a whole bunch of money.
I mean, would you not say you'd say he's underperforming if he was making 65 points in 81 games. Like, that's not, like, that's not reaching his potential yet.
Yeah, like, I think Zegras, what people are hoping for is a point-a-game guy who can lead a line and is, like, somewhat responsible enough in his own end that he's not a, like, a guy that they can count on to lead them, right? Like, and I think Zegras, he's not there yet. So I think that's why he didn't get the big boy contract. I'm also thinking Zegras, we're seeing a lot of RFAs these days. They're not signing those 8-year long-term deals anymore. They're signing those little shorter bridge deals because they know they can make more money with their next contract. They're betting on themselves. And with the salary cap potentially going up, it financially makes sense. And I think if you're the Ducks too, right, you're like, I'm not willing to lock in a guy at $8 million. I mean, for 8 years, if he's not going to be, you know, the guy. Like, and I've said before on this podcast, I don't think Zegras is a top six center on the Ducks for in the next 5 years. I could see him either being on the wing or traded. So,
but that's what's crazy to me, right? This is what's crazy to me, where you feel like
even at 65 points, he's not worth $6 million. Like, what do you think 65 points is worth in his league?
Oh, no. I think he's worth his contract. I just was thinking, like, he's not getting, like, 8x8. Like, that was not the contract that was being discussed, I think. Because I think both, the Ducks and Zegras are like, this isn't where I'm at. This is not my potential. Like, I could be, if I was being paid for my potential, I would be getting 8x8.5. I don't know. But I think both parties recognize that, hey, like, we're not there yet. So just pay me what I feel like I should be worth. So I think the 3x5.75 is a reasonable deal. Like, it reflects his production, but not his potential. And I think that's something that we're going to see with Pat Verbeek a lot. Like, I'm curious why you thought Jamie Drysdale was going to get like 3 million or somewhere around there, given the fact that he played 8 games last season.
Yes, he's, you know, he's probably, there's a bit of an injury risk. I get it. But when he's healthy, like, you look, it's very hard for you to get 32 points as a young defenseman's league. If he's healthy, I think he probably gets about, what, 35 points this year? And a 35-point defenseman, especially, like, I know an RFA, it's different. Still probably gets you at least 3, right?
It might, but I think because, like, he's been injured since, like, the beginning of last season, right? Like, you haven't seen him back on the ice, like, playing NHL games. So, like, how can you definitely give this guy, like, 3 years? Well, no, give him $3 million per. Like, I'm actually surprised he got anything more than 2, because, like, with guys who've, you know, especially young guys, like, you know, they don't have any rights or anything. Like, they have no arbitration. Like, I thought you'd be like, hey, let's just sign him to a 1-year prove it deal and then we'll assess off that production. But I feel like this deal kind of is really in the Ducks' favor, because you're locking up a guy that I agree who probably has good potential when he's healthy, like 30, 40 points offensive contributor. And you're locking him for 3 years at $2.3 million per, and he's probably going to keep growing as a young player. Like, this is a great deal for the Ducks. And, like,
because I feel like when you look at, like, younger players like Drysdale, right, when you do, like, longer term deals, it's more like you gotta kind of, like, balance out, hey, his growth in contract per year, right? You're paying more than he's worth in his first year, right? But, and by the end of it, you're expecting, by, let's say, a 3-year deal, he's providing more value than a $2.3 million deal, right? In this case, like, it should be like an escalating, right? In the opposite sense of how, like, a veteran player signed a long-term deal, let's say you sign someone for, you know, 8x8. You're expecting that first year, they're probably going to provide you the value of $9 million, right? And then by the last year, you're supposed to provide you, like, $7 million. You know what I mean? You know what I'm going with this, Jeffrey?
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, you see a lot of RFA deals where it's, like, an increasing salary, even though the cap it stays the same. Like, kind of to reflect the production year per year if they grow up properly.
And I would say he's probably pretty easily going to surpass, like, let's say $1.8 million in value this year if he's healthy. And then by the end of the third year, I still think he's going to be worth more than the $2.8 million, let's say. If that was my comparison, right? Like, it's very easy for him to be better than the deal suggests.
Yeah, no. I think this, in the end, it was, like, both of these contracts, when you don't have arbitration rights, like, you are kind of forced into your own, into a corner, and you kind of have to sign whatever the team gives you. I mean, you can hold out if you want, but is that really good for your development as a young player? You need to be getting into games to grow, right? To maximize your future earnings. So I feel like Pat Verbeek really used his position well here to sign Zegras and Drysdale to really good deals, I would say. I mean, granted, the Ducks aren't a great team, but like it's interesting to see how, you know, they're setting a standard already with the beginning of the rebuild about, you know, just because, you know, we have a lot of cap space. Plus, we have an internal cap, but like, you're not going to be milking a whole bunch of money out of us. Like, we're going to be rebuilding slowly. And then, you know, once you've proven that you are a true NHL star or NHL player, then you'll get the money that you're worth. But for now, you're going to have to continue to just demonstrate game per game that you are who you are, basically.
Yep, agreed.
I did find it interesting, like, how you mentioned how, like, you know, we do see RFAs get, like, increasing salaries year per year. The Ducks are a team that doesn't do that. So I wonder if that probably also contributed a little bit to why it took so long for them to sign. Like, I think the Ducks are one of those teams where they have their own type of, you know, salary system, and they're just not a team that, you know, is willing to deviate year per year on how much salary they're giving a player. They're kind of like, if your cap it is this, your salary cap is this, type of thing.
Yeah, like, I'm not looking at the, like, cash value. I'm looking at, like, the cap hit.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Like the expected value of each player year per year. As you're younger, maybe you're like $1 million worth, like, cap hit wise. But, you know, as you grow, your expected value or like your expected cap hit should be higher because you're producing more, right? But I don't know. I just thought that was just like something interesting to kind of point out, that the fact that they're not getting as, you know, they're not getting more money, or like, you know, like those weird, like the Leafs, right? When guys were getting like minimum salary, but their signing bonuses were like $12-13 million. Like,
well, that was just to, like, you know, a cap shenaniganery, though.
I don't think it's cap shenaniganery, more just like it's more enticing to a player to get a signing bonus versus a salary, because I think it's better to get more money up front than it is to kind of wait. I don't know.
Well, I think that just had to do with a lockout. It's lockout proof. Make sure the guys get paid whether or not there's a lockout. So if there's a lockout, I believe they don't get paid. Or they get paid. Yeah, they don't get paid. But because signing bonuses are different, I think they get paid the signing bonus regardless.
Yeah, like, you're more than likely your lockout is not happening July 1st when most signing bonuses are due. So that's why people would get paid. Speaking of people getting paid, I'm not sure if Bill Guerin forgot, but his buyouts of Parisian Suter aren't just for this year. It's also for next year, because he signed a couple of guys to extensions that I'm a little bit curious about. I'm not sure if it's worth it now to sign them to an extensions, or, like, I don't know. It was just a little bit curious to me to see three extensions all by the same team, all for, like, a decent amount of change, too.
Mm-hmm. Who are they?
Like, Matt Zuccarello, you know, he's coming off a $6 million like AAV deal, but he is 36. He's just signed a 2-year extension at 4.125 per. Marcus Foligno signed an extension of 4x4, and then Ryan Hartman signed an extension of 4x3. Like, if you're looking at cap friendly, the Parisian Suter buyouts are affecting them this year and next year, which is like the significant ones, like the where they're having like almost $15 million tied up in their cap space. But like next year, those extensions are going to kick into place while they still have that $15 million of dead cap space. So according to Cap Friendly, they have only $12 million of cap space with 15 players signed. Like, that could be a little bit tight. I mean, they don't have anyone significant to really re-sign. They kind of did all their business now, but, you know, it kind of like you're tying up money to guys that I don't know if you need to be tying up these guys, though.
The Minnesota Wild are one of those teams I just never understand. Like, what are they doing?
Well, I feel like they're trying to... Well, I think everyone thought when they bought up Prezine Suter, they were going to be like this team that was just going to do like a quick retool, you know, get a couple of high draft picks. And then once the Suter and Parise buyouts, you know, were less cumbersome, then they were able to, you know, kind of compete again because they were able to, you know, sign more players and not have that much dead cap. But they've kind of been like a playoff bubble team this last few years where, you know, they've been able to ice a fairly competitive team. And I mean, good on them. Like, they're not being forced to overpay in free agency to get guys. They've just been able to kind of develop their own guys, you know, take some, like, you know, some not low risk, but like they've been able to like bring in guys that, you know, aren't, you know, superstars, but they've just kind of worked out for this team and they've made some good moves. And I don't know, I just feel like these extensions are kind of a little bit risky, like especially the Marcus Foligno one, like 4x4 for a guy who's 32 years old, plays, you know, a heavy game. Like, I don't know. And it's just risky. Like, I could see him by next year or the year after, he's probably playing 4 or 5 minutes. And are you willing to pay $4 million for a guy like that?
Well, the understanding is like what I mentioned before, right? Is that realistically, he's going to provide value in that first year at 33 at around 5.5 or whatever. And then you kind of just stretch out the term and to lower the hit, right? Like you mentioned, they're putting up $15 million next year, right? In dead cap. So if they end up wanting him, you know, you kind of have to do something like that.
Marcus Foligno had 21 points in 65 games last year. Granted, he provides something that the team doesn't have in terms of leadership and grit. But is he really worth, like if you're just arbitrarily, just the number that you gave, $5.5 million, is that his expected value? Like, I feel like this contract is more kind of on his intangibles than more of his actual production.
Yeah, definitely intangibles. But then you're also hoping that last year was a aberration more than a where his game is, right? If you look at the previous 2 years, still probably not worth 5.5, but definitely when he's healthy is okay. I don't know. Yeah, is he worth 5.5? Probably not.
I don't know. I just feel like this is where teams get in trouble when they're signing bottom six guys for significant term and significant dollar value. That's when teams get in trouble with the cap. And for a team like Minnesota that doesn't have a lot of cap space, it just seems a little bit risky to me. Like, I do like the Zuccarello deal. I mean, he is an older player, but you know, I think the fact that they gave him 2 years just kind of guaranteed that, you know, the fact that he's going to get paid for 2 more years, I think really is beneficial for, you know, for a guy who is on the older side that, you know, potentially could retire, but he's put up good numbers. So I feel like this is like a really good contract. And I don't know, the Ryan Hartman one, I'm still kind of like hemming and hawing. Like, you know, he showed up for, you know, maybe one, like last year and the year before, like he really showed up, but is that his true self, or is that more just the fact that he's been given top 6 minutes and got to play with Kaprizov quite a bit? Like, that again seems like a risky signing, because to me he seems more of like a third line guy, like a good third line guy, but maybe not a really good top six guy.
So I know you mentioned something about getting in trouble. Is it when teams get in trouble because they spend so much money on like bottom pairing guys, or is it when teams start spending a bunch of money on guys they consider like legacy guys, like they're just part of the team, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's kind of both. Hartman probably less so, but like the Foligno and Zuccarello, maybe you can call them like not legacy signings, but guys that you know work. And you know, but the thing is though, like legacy signings to me are guys that define your franchise and help you win something. What have the Wild won though? That's the thing. Like, they haven't won much. So I don't know if you would consider these legacy signings. I think they're more just, these are guys that you know, they place their role on your team And, you know, instead of trying to go for the unknown, you're just going to go with what you do know.
Define your organization. You don't think a Marcus Foligno and his intangibles define that organization, though?
No, not really. Like, I mean, he wears an A, so I feel like internally, like, they think he's very important to them. And I do feel like he's probably a fan favorite. I'm not a big, like, Minnesota Wild, you know, I don't watch a whole
You're bunch not a of wild people. Head?
No. So maybe he is important to the team, but again, like, these quote unquote legacy signings, also like these guys that, you know, with the intangibles and stuff, they're always end up being your bottom six, middle, maybe like middle of your lineup type of guys. And maybe it's kind of both, right? Like, I don't know. You just see teams that, especially, I think it's a term that probably bugs me the most, right? Like, if you're signing a guy to, like, a 1-2-year deal with, like, that's, you know, maybe too much money, at least it's only 1-2-year deal. Like, you can get out of it later. But, like, Foligno for 4 years, like, that contract's going to take him to 36. You're going to pay Marcus Foligno $4 million at 36 to play for you under probably your fourth line at that point? I'm a little bit worried about that.
Yeah, it fully has to come back down to, hey, like, how much is a player like that worth your organization in terms of, like, intangibles?
Yeah, and I mean, like, you should probably be having this conversation not when they become extension eligible. I think maybe this could have been something done later on in the season, like, see how it goes. I mean, he is 32. You should see kind of like what your team is, how it stacks up with the rest of the league, right? Before you even, you know, consider signing these. I mean, like, I will say, I think the Zuccarello signing is probably the only one I'm fine with, but like the Hartman and the, like the Foligno one, right? Like, what if you're a team that comes out of gate and you're shit, or like Kaprizov gets injured, Spurgeon gets injured, and now you're, you know, a bottom five team in the league. I feel like Foligno and Hartman could have been great players that you could have used at the trade deadline and maybe got some assets back. But now, you know, now that you signed them to extensions, that again lessen, and you're, you know, the same thing happens, you know, Kaprizov and Spurgeon get injured. Now you really don't have many trade assets at the trade deadline, right? Like, I don't know. I feel like these could have been extensions that could have been pushed forward and not done in the preseason.
Yeah, agreed.
All right. Speaking of teams that might end up doing poorly, what are your predictions for the season? I feel like this is our episode right before we get into the actual, like, season itself. Like, next time we record, it's probably maybe the season's already started. But do you have any, like, big predictions for this upcoming NHL season? Or do you have, like, a Stanley Cup favorite, a team that you think is going to surprise?
I've got a long shot prediction.
Or like the Stanley Cup, or
just in general. I think this is going to be, this is such a long shot one, but if this happens, I'm going to be like a genius. I think Max Domi does incredibly well this year. And as a result, the Leafs trade Willy Nylander because they can't sign him to a deal. Is that spicy or is that spicy?
I think the Nylander getting traded is potentially spicy. But like the fact that you trade Nylander would mean probably you're trying to re-sign Domi and over Nylander. Is that your thought process?
Yeah.
And I mean, we're probably assuming because Domi is an older player. Well, not that much older, actually. I think he's only a year older. Like, his number is probably going to be a little bit less than Nylander. Well,
there's
probably
less of a history to work with too, right?
Yeah, and I think it's gonna be interesting because Domi and Nylander have kind of been like attached to the hip throughout preseason. Like, they've been line mates. So I think it'd be interesting if, well, the thing is, like, when do you trade Nylander though? Like, that has to be a trade at the draft, right? Like, I don't see the Leafs trading Nylander mid season. Like, that's gonna make your team worse.
Mm-hmm.
So when do you see Nylander being traded then?
I think like deadline. Like near the deadline. It'll just be like, not on the deadline, maybe like a week before the deadline.
Do you think there's a hockey trade available that like makes the Leafs better while trading away Nylander?
I think they get a bunch of picks and then flip those picks for
for someone else.
Well, fair enough, right? Like,
I mean, you wanted a spicy one? That is a spicy one.
No, I think, I mean, we haven't heard anything about a Nylander extension in a while. So, like, I mean, granted, we're not the biggest Leafs fans right now, so we don't really follow too much. But, like I think it's spicy in the fact that you're saying that the Leafs will prioritize re-signing Domi over Nylander, which I think is the spicy.
Yeah, it's getting spicy.
Yeah. No. I think that's a very good spicy take. Would you like to hear my spicy take for this season?
Let's hear it.
I am going to predict that the Tampa Bay Lightnings don't make the playoffs this season.
Ooh, that's a hot one. But at the same time, I could totally see that happening.
Right? Like, I look at Tampa. They're... Maybe they have one last hurrah in them or something. Like, you know, they made the playoffs. I mean, they made the Stanley Cup Finals, like 3 years in a row prior to, like, last season or something. And they finally get ousted by the Leafs. And, you know, maybe now that they finally had an actual summer off, maybe they'll be able to, you know, recompete and be competitive again. But to me, I look at this team. It's a good team, but, you know, with the Vasilevsky injury, I don't know if they have as much depth as they had before. I mean, like, again, this is a team that's going to find value out of nowhere, but I don't know. I wonder if this is the year where they finally get ousted, and especially in the Atlantic where there are so many strong teams. Like, I know you're going to say the Habs are probably not on the same level, but any team in the Atlantic, any of those Atlantic divisional games are going to be hard games. Like, I could see, you know, maybe you edge out your opponent in your season series, but it's not going to be a significant amount. Like, I don't see anyone sweeping anyone in the Atlantic division, right? Like, I don't know. To me, I just look at the Lightning and I think, you know what? I think this is the year where they're going to, you know, just miss the playoffs just because of how strong the Atlantic and the East in general. But also, like, do they have that depth anymore where they can, you know, compete like they've been before? Like, the Vasilevsky injury, I think, is probably going to be their downfall. And I think it's just going to be interesting. Which goalie are you going to pick up on waiver wires to survive for the next 2 months? Like, which goalie is going to hold them together for these opening 2 months?
Yeah. Because, like, they're expecting Jonas Johansson, right? But then... their third would be what, Matt Tompkins? And if you look at that defense it's pretty shaky in my mind, at least. Like, Sergachev, Hedman, fine. Yeah, Chernak, yeah, awesome. But then after that, you're going with a lot of, I would say, depth pieces. Like, Calvin DeHaan at this point is not, it's not going to carry his line. I don't know who Nick Perbix is. And Darren Radish, I would say, is probably a tweener at this point, right?
Yeah, like, I've heard of Nick Perbix, at least. Like, he played fairly well in his rookie season last year. And, you know, that's why he's, like, I think, yeah, like, I agree, like, Darren Radish is probably an AHLer on most teams. Like I do look at the forward group, and I'm like, okay, it's a decent enough forward group. But it's just, like, what do you have after that? You really don't have much after that, which is my concern, I would say, right? Like, if someone gets injured, who's the next guy who is going to step up? Like, in the past, you had, like, a Ross Colton, you know, Cirelli in the beginning, right? Those are guys that could step up and take, you know, significant minutes. But now it's like, this is now kind of like a three-line team, two-line team. Like, they're not as deep as they were. And defensively, again, I agree. Like, Jonas Johansson, maybe he suddenly turns into this amazing goalie. But in my opinion, he's probably... like a 3 GAA sub 900 save percentage, and the Lightning are just going to have to outscore all these teams until Vasilevsky gets back.
Yeah. That's what it is, right? Like, they remind me a lot of the Leafs, where it's like, oh yeah, we're just going to win by outscoring people, but can't just expect your forwards to do that day in, day out, right?
Yeah, they no longer have that same firepower when they had the Killorns, the Palats and stuff, right? Like, this is a different team now, and Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, again, this is the Lightning and they're probably going to surprise us.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
This is just my hot take in the fact that I do think the Lightning are not going to make the playoffs this season.
I mean, I could totally see that happening. They're not making the playoffs. Who wins the cup? Just give me a team.
I am going to say, I somehow don't know if this makes sense, but I feel like the Oilers they have to win eventually, right? Like, I mean, I feel like if you look at this team that is currently in Edmonton right now, it's, I mean, every year we say it, this is the strongest team that's ever been in Edmonton in the McDavid area. And every year they fail to make it to the next round or make it to the Stanley Cup final. But this year I look at this team and I'm like, okay, maybe this is the year with it. This is the strongest they've ever been, right? Like, I think that Connor Brown contract is ridiculous and, you know, good on him to, you know, sign a 1-year deal and then hopefully he gets paid when he's 30 and sign like a big deal. Like, this has to be the year, right? Like, Edmonton, like, I think defensively, you maybe could improve a little bit on your CC, like someone on the right side a little bit, maybe get a little bit better there. Maybe, you know, I don't know. Like, I think in terms of goaltending too, like one of your guys is going to hit, like Campbell or Skinner's got to play well enough to be like a starter, like for a full season. Like, I don't know. This team just seems like this is, again, the best team that Edmonton's ever put together in the McDavid era. So I think they have to win, because if they don't win, Dreisaitl is a free agent. Well, he's going to be an upcoming free agent in 2025, and that's going to put even more pressure. And I think then, you know, with that pressure, I don't think Edmonton's going to do it. So they have to do it the year before, or else there's no way they're going to get an extension from Dreisaitl.
Okay. I think mine has been a very popular pick, and I totally get why. I think the Hurricane win.
That is an interesting pick. Is there a reason why, or is it just kind of like something that's just been out there for quite a while?
It's just a really well-built team, you know what I mean? And they have got high-end talent, like Aho, like Teravainen. And then on defense, they're just very well-built. And it looks like from how their signings are structured, where basically everyone is either going to be a UFA next year or the year after. Like, this seems like a go for it type of year. And I'm missing Svechnikov. Yeah, and Svechnikov. Like, on defense, their entire 8 defensemen signed to NHL contracts all expire next year or the year after. Like, they just give me a vibe where it's like, well, we might as well go for it. Looking at what they're holding in terms of draft capital, they can go trade and add, you know, and they have like limited cap space. I get it, but like they have, you know, I think easily the best defense in the league. Forwards, they're young, they're paid very cheaply, and I don't know, man. This team just strikes a team that would just surprise everyone. It's well coached.
Yeah, no, I think I kind of agree with all the, like, you know, the facts that you mentioned. Like, defensively, like in terms of even just like namesakes, right? Like, would you not say that all 6 of the defensemen are probably top 4 defensemen? Like, that's how deep they are. Like, I mean, Tony D'Angelo, you can argue what he is, but he is a power play specialist, but he probably could play top 4 if he, you know, focused on playing hockey. They've got 3 goalies.
If you shelter him, he could be a top 4 player.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Most top 4s aren't really sheltered, but I get, like, if he has the right partner with him on defense, he can play top 4 minutes. And then in goal, they've got 3 goalies that I would say are, you're gonna hit at least 2 of them probably for the full season. And yeah, like, this is a team, I think, again, it just depends on if they can stay healthy. Like, they've got the depth, but I think you really saw it when Svechnikov got injured, when Pacioretty got injured, right? Like, these were guys that, you know, were maybe players that you thought you could depend on in the playoffs, you know, when you needed that all-important goal. you got that goal from one of them. But like, because they're both injured, they kind of were lackluster in the playoffs, where they didn't have that scoring efficiency or that tenacity that we saw earlier in the season. So again, like, one thing I do have to look at this team is like, if they need a goal, who is it coming from, right? Probably Svechnikov, maybe Aho. But after that, it's like, is there enough timely scoring from this team? They can defend, but can they score is my one question.
Agreed. All right, I have one question. I just want a one-word answer for you. It's either yes or no, okay?
Sure.
By the end of the season, is Alexis Lafreniere a New York Ranger?
I am going to say yes.
Okay. That's my one question. Do you want one more question?
From you? Sure.
Aw, Jeffrey, so sweet. At the end of the season, for this year's draft picks, do Arizona Coyotes have 15 draft picks this year? Right now they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
I am going to say no.
You think they have less than 15?
Yes, because they're going to trade a whole bunch of them for future years. You can't bring in 15 rookies. Like, it just doesn't make sense math-wise, right? Like, you're going to trade like a 2024 fourth for a 2025 fourth or something like that. They're not going to do that. And I think they're going to be a team that, yes, they're going to bring in draft picks throughout the season as they trade off guys, but I can see, like, I feel like the big thing is pick swaps these days, right? Like, not really pick swaps, but like, I'll trade you a sixth for a third as part of, like, to replace the value. Instead of giving you a pick straight up, it's going to be like a pick swap where I'm moving 60 spots higher in the draft, in the same draft or something. So,
all right, that's my question. Anything from you, Jeffrey?
Nope, I'm ready for the season to start. It's kind of creeped up on us a little bit. I mean, I've been busy with my, like, own stuff, but like, I'm like, wait, the NHL season started on what, Wednesday? Like, oh god, I need to make sure I'm ready to watch those games. Like, oh, NHL's almost here. But yeah, I'm excited, and I hope you're just as excited. I can't wait for the Habs to surprise everyone and make the playoffs, and I'm sure
finish last.
No, I think the Habs aren't as bad as some other teams out there, especially out there in the West. But yeah, I'm excited. Hopefully you're excited. Hopefully our listeners are excited. And we'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks' time, and we'll see if any of our predictions are right, and, you know, who comes out of the gates hot and who comes out of the gates cold.
We'll talk to you soon then. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network. You want to complain about us? You can tweet us at BOP_POD on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.